Welcome, and that's online. A welcome along to Discovering Wisdom Module, Mind and its Potential. And I thank you for those of you who are doing the Lotus Sutra Mantras last weekend, last week. So let's engage as we normally do. We'll start off with some prayers and motivation. The teaching will begin, and during the teaching there's a break for our questions and so forth, and the meditations too. So please, we'll begin as we normally do by first of all adjusting the one's posture, getting comfortable in the seat. So please do that. The spine will be straight and your shoulders relaxed. You can place your hands wherever you like. Your eyes can be closed or partially open, whatever suits you. Once you are comfortable in your seat, now let your body breathe itself. With the body breathing itself, just relax into awareness. And feel as if the nature of the ground beneath you was of the composition of starry sapphire light. And the space above you is filled with rainbows and offerings. And in the space directly in front of you, at the level of your eyebrows, appears a throne. And on that throne are cushions of the lotus, the sun, and the moon. And sitting on the moon seat is the Buddha Shakyamuni. He's golden in color and wearing the three robes of the monk. His left hand is holding a begging bowl, and his right is touching the earth. He's also surrounded by an assembly of other enlightened beings. There are many bodhisattvas and deities. Meanwhile, you are surrounded by all thinking beings. I think that your mother is sitting beside you on the left, your father beside you on the right. Friends and family are behind you. Difficult people are directly in front of you. And strangers surround these groups of people. Now, all of us are lucky to still be alive today. So take a few moments to contemplate on how it is that you're so fortunate to still be alive. Not only are we alive, we have the leisure and opportunity to attain a spiritual goal that suits us. Well, we have to act quickly. Things are not quite right. And the world does not exist as it seems to. Though this is the case, we have a spiritual friend. We've met one. We have faith in them. And this friend is leading us in the safe direction of the three rare sublime ones. The Buddha as teacher and doctor, the Dharma as scripture, realizations, and medicine, and the spiritual community, those who accompany us on our path. So we want to make our offering of practice as purely as possible to the three rare sublime ones. I want you to imagine yourself to be as clear as the deity. The whole divine identity, pure appearance. And think that you're holding a mantra and bell and you're within a sphere of great bliss. Being the embodiment of wisdom and skillful means. Join me in saying, I go for refuge as the enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. There is a response to this wish of ours. See that from the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectars are streaming down. And these dissolve into oneself and all living beings surrounding you. These lights and nectars purify negative karma and obstructions. And they increase our health and lifespan. Our virtues and Dharma realizations are also increased. But cleansed by wisdom and fortitude, fortified with compassionate love, we recollect the four immeasurable thoughts. We decide to develop these ourselves and to establish all beings into those four immeasurable states. But to affirm this, join me in saying, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias and attachment to friends and hatred for enemies. In response to wish of ours, see, from the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectars are streaming down. And these dissolve into yourself and all living beings. Negative karmas and obstructions are purified. Your health, lifespan, virtues, and Dharma realizations are all increased. We've been fortified with wisdom and compassion and love. Exhale and relax. We're from that relaxed state of awareness, I feel for accumulating merit to you. And in their presence, we say, reverently, I prostrate my body's teaching mind. I present flowers of any cup of offering, that's one of the legends. I declare all the negative actions accumulated since beginning this time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of psychic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma from living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. So, to prevent the loss of our merit and the decrease of it, we imagine that our body, speech, mind, merits and all enjoyments are utterly transformed into the enjoyments of a pure environment. And we're going to offer this pure land to the Buddha, Lama, and the spiritual entourage. And so we say, this ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with mountain area, four continents of southern land. I imagine this as a Buddha field of love, where all living beings enjoy its pure land. So release the offering, and the Buddha accepts it with delight, and he smiles at us. And as he's smiling at us, we look up and meet the gaze of the Buddha. Under his enlightened gaze, we recollect the three principal aspects of the spiritual path. And from the heart of the Buddha, infinite light rays emanate. These reach all environments and all beings. And everything dissolves into light, which dissolves into the Buddha. You diminish in size. Your true space enters your crown and descends down to your heart. Mind of the Buddha and your mind become of a single nature. From within this single nature, you hear the resonance of the mantra. And hearing it, you begin to recite it. Now from your heart, rays of light fill 10 directions of space. Every sentient being abiding within space is utterly transformed. Through this transformation, that your two purposes are achieved. And now we just acknowledge that this meditation was one of imagination that has imprinted the mind. All that's required is for the right conditions to be met, and we will become fully awakened beings able to help others do the same. I think the purpose of these classes, these EV classes, is to help us do that. And breathing in through your nostrils, exhale through your mouth, move your body around, shake your shoulders, and bring your awareness back into the room. So, hey, welcome to the class, everyone. Let's have a look at what we've gone through already. So we looked at the three root delusions. So can somebody just tell me what they are? Ian?
Anger, attachment, ignorance.
And ignorance. These are called the three root delusions. We looked at different categories of mental factor. In general, it's like 51 mental factors. Depends upon which text you look at, and they're categorized in different ways. One way they're categorized is through main minds and mental factors. So the main minds are basically our six main consciousnesses: visual consciousness, auditory consciousness. The one we're really concerned with is mental consciousness. We defined mind or consciousness as that which is clear in the knowing, and we know this clarity of knowing is made up of moments of clarity of knowing. Each moment is a mind. And these moments all go together, they're called continuities of mind. And they can be of gross, subtle, and very subtle nature. We began by looking at the fortunate human rebirth, which is basically us. And what's wonderful about being us is that we have the mind of the human being. And it's with this mind that we can discover what the sources of suffering are and abandon them. And find out what it is that makes us better people and probably enlightened beings, and adopt those courses. We also looked at the mind and the brain, and we should know that mind is not brain and brain is not mind. They're two different phenomena. One being physical and the other not being physical. So today's topic, we're going to look at how delusions are produced, and we're going to sort of have a look at this. One of the root delusions called ignorance. Some of the material Brian might upon is this material. Probably one of the best books to read here, especially if you consider yourself as a beginner, is How to See Yourself as You Really Are by the Dalai Lama. They're very, very good meditations on the whole path, basically, but mainly on how to discover your own deepest nature. The book up in the corner, it's called Profound Ethics, is it? Can you see the title? Profound Ethics and
Profound Emptiness.
Profound Emptiness and something ethics, I think.
Ethics and Profound Emptiness.
Yes, they're both profound.
Yes.
So this has got, if you want to find books that crack you up about how to deal with delusions, this is one of them. Really good on dealing with the delusions of attachment and anger. And of course, there's a huge section on intimacy. So I become ignorance. The other book is another man called Ari Davis 400. It's writings on how to overcome attachment. Tremendous. Really good. All these books are sort of very useful to offer. Of course, Bodhisattva's Way of Life, and the terrific chapter there called Patience on how to overcome anger. The whole last, second to last chapter is all about emptiness again. They're all terrific books. And still easy to read, all of them, as well as here. We know, did we talk about the causes? Last time we spoke, was it? We talked about the causes of the delusions, or six of them. Did we do that or not?
No, we didn't cover it.
No, we didn't cover it. Good, we'll do it today. We know that delusions aren't always there, right? So if something is not always there, then you know it's produced. It depends on something, then it's there. If those things aren't there, it's not there. So a delusion is not always with us, is it? Like, we're not always angry, for instance. We're not always lustful. We're not always patient. So these are mental factors, mental states. They come and they go. That means they're products.
But isn't ignorance always there?
That's
why you're here?
Is it? It depends what you're saying, what you mean by that.
The three and four, like ignorance is a delusion.
Sure.
And we've always got that.
Yeah, so it seems to be like an innate thing, but we're not always under its influence.
Right.
That's the thing. Yeah. And it's always present, but it doesn't mean to say that we're always under its influence. We have also many other, like for all of us, right? If you look at us, is anybody really angry here? Anybody want to hurt anybody?
Not at the moment.
That's the time. That's right. So you're going to say, so where's that anger? It's not like it's non-existent, is it? It's just like it's not here at the moment. So where is it? Well, it's not really anywhere. But what's required here is some conditions, and then anger will appear. And after a short period of time, conditions will vanish, or something else will happen, and then our anger vanishes. And we're in another different state. So if anything like that, if you know that, then you know that all the delusions are produced, which means they're all subject to change. They're not always there. If they're always there, they'll be permanent. They're not. So then they come and they go. When a delusion is kicked off, we create an action, there comes a time when you say the delusion finishes or the karma finishes. When that finishing is accomplished, what was done is now called a seed. That means that what we've done is a potential for to create something else for us. It could create a similar behavior. It could create an experience similar to the effect we produced. It could create a rebirth. Those are all the possibilities. So that thing is called the seed. So just not saying now, we're not angry right now, but we have the potential to become angry. That's the seed. It's within us. Is this clear with everyone? Is this okay? Yeah. The seeds have this connotation of potential. It's like, the seed has the potential to give rise to a plant. It's not a plant. It's got the potential to give rise to a plant. We have potentials within us to get crazy. To be angry all sorts of ways, right? We have that potential as a human. And I often think we have the potential to become enlightened or become mass murderers. The most terrible things that humans can do, we know that they've done it. But there's also a potential to become enlightened. So that potential is seed. still see potential. We're not less murderers now. We could be. And for plenty of times in the past, ordinary people like us have done terrible things. Also, potential, we know that from, what's his name? Anguli Mala, one of the first mass murderers documented in history, became an arahant in his lifetime. He was a mass murderer in his lifetime and attained liberation in his lifetime. So that shows me, okay, just because we have these potentials doesn't mean to say we have to experience the effect of those potentials. Seeds depend upon conditions. And like I said, we're not all angry now, so why not? Well, the conditions aren't there. If they were there, we'd get angry, right? What's that? Well, that's the scene. That's the potential I have to become angry. I've got that. I haven't met the conditions right now, so that's all cool. Now, not only do you have to have this seed, this potential to get angry, you need to meet an object that's going to make you angry. An object to meet one of the conditions. Does this make sense here? Is this reasonable? Now, not only do you have to meet the object, you have to pay a type of attention to that object, and it's called inappropriate attention. And this is where the ignorance comes in that you brought up. So we focus on the object in a really unhelpful way, and we don't even know that. So it happens so quickly that it seems natural. So what I mean by this is that, say we take our vision, for instance, right? So we know we have the seed of anger within us. We meet a particular object, so we see the object. And what happens if it's to do with anger, for instance? Yeah, that's right. Why do we experience aversion? It's got to do with our attention.
So we're focusing on something negative.
That's right. That's exactly right. We're focusing on
the unattractive
qualities.
The perceived threat.
Yeah, of this object. That's right. And then it depends upon that, a feeling's going to arise, isn't it? And we're going to think that our feelings are true. And then we're going to act on that. We haven't trained ourselves, it's a normal progression. So let's suppose that this is actually what we do, right? Our object is unattractive. We look at it, and that's all we see, the unattractive qualities. This is what they mean by attention being inappropriate. We know that people, for instance, aren't all bad. Yet this type of attention only sees the bad, sees what's unlikable. Straight after that, we're going to get the feeling, an uncomfortable feeling. Then we're going to act upon our feeling towards this object. And we don't do this just once or twice. We've done it again and again. So this is called familiarity. The condition of having done this a few times, it becomes very easy to meet objects like that particular object. We do the same thing. Now, why? Well, there's kind of another condition that really helps us do this. We become distracted from other, like most of us are learning about Dharma, aren't we? And we're trying to learn that actually sentient beings are suffering. They're all under the control of karma and delusion. But when we see the object as unattractive, that sort of goes out the window, right? We forget about that. We forget about the part we're playing in it. And the object itself looks really unattractive. We've forgotten that this is an object that's under the throes of karma and delusion and suffering. So that means we're distracted from what we know. And the influence of others. So the influence of others can be other people, can be news, media, your society. It can also be like karma and delusion. They're the others also. So this comes into it. And then, of course, so what do we normally do when we find the unlikable object and it seems to threaten us? We might cut it off, right? Like, say something harsh with our speech to get it further away from us, right? I don't want to be near such an object. It makes me too uncomfortable. So then I'll start to speak harshly to it. So you have the bad habit. What habit do you create when you get angry?
Shouting.
Yeah, well, my dad used to shout. That was the first thing. I raised my voice. You find probably most of you do the same, right? You think you need to let you know how I feel. So the tone of the voice changes, the timbre rises. Another thing people often do is they stand up. They start to bear over you a bit, isn't it? It's like, you know, they become aggressive. So all of that takes place. And if you do it like that, that's your habitual response to meeting unpleasant objects. So these are the basic six causes. So what we're going to do tonight is go through these and look at use it around ignorance. Next week we'll do it around attachment and anger. I'm just trying to get you familiar with the six causes. Because if you do that, when things happen to you, one thing you must know is the seed, the substantial cause. That's our business. They don't have it. They have their own substantial causes. The seed is a substantial cause, right, for our behavior. You must meet an object. This is not going to set itself off unless you have an object. Your object could be a memory, it could be, in case of anger, it could be an animate object or an inanimate object. I get cranky at my computer. So it's not a living being, but, so I can't really kill it or hurt it too much. So there's never a complete action, but you do it enough times, isn't it? You know, you can be in the habit of getting upset because technology doesn't work. And then somebody sort of may barb the hornet, so now you get upset at that, you know, the birds and birds. So they're quite, especially the top three, they're the real, I think they're sort of classified more as causes, and the other three are supporting conditions. So it seems like we have the potential for these disturbing emotions, always think, not just the disturbing emotions, to become fully awakened too. The Buddha nature is seen as a seed, the potential to become awakened. We have the seeds of every delusion and every good quality. But the objects, they're dealt with inappropriately. It's the seeds that produce the afflictions. So here I put like this, like a reptile coming out of a little egg, a seed. You know, it just looks like it's all nice, and then you see what comes out, and go, careful, careful. So this seed, okay, this is the seeds are substantial causes of something else. It's going to turn into something else of similar type. It's probably the most important cause of the recurring emotional struggles that we engage in. But it seems the latent potential for a particular delusion to arise in your mind. It's a substantial cause. It's planted and strengthened each time we experience that affliction in the past. And this deep-seated tendency remains dormant. Like I said, we have the seeds of anger. They're dormant right now. And with the conditions, we'll be upset. So they have to be triggered by an object and an inappropriate attention to that object. The delusion will not spring up unless that attention is inappropriate. So the seed is the mind's latent potential for a delusion in this case, since we're talking about disturbing emotions. That's right. In fact, there's two levels of the inappropriate attention here, which I'll talk to about when we get to ignorance itself. Now, so we've got the seeds. What was the second one? What was the second cause for affliction? And this object oftentimes is the external trigger. The objects can also be internal, but oftentimes they're not. Especially like us from the beginnings, right? And lay people, we're out in the world, there's a lot of objects that we come into contact with. Most of the times we're going to have aversion to some, we're going to find it's unpleasant. Others we're going to like it's pleasant, and there's a whole lot we don't care about. We're just neutral. So what's the problem with being neutral about meeting up with objects? Yeah, apathy and indifference. Because here we are, like, you know, all these people in Gaza, these people all over the world suffering, right? There's a whole lot of people, I don't want to know. I'm indifferent to it. Others get anger in response to what's going on. And others have aversion. But others might have great compassion towards it. Yeah. It just depends. So I've got the object. So the objects themselves don't cause the suffering. What's the actual deepest cause of our suffering is the
seed.
It's the seed, the substantial cause for suffering. Those objects are not substantial causes of our suffering. But why not? Why is the object not the substantial cause, the main cause of our suffering? Thank you, Ben. That's right. Because it doesn't turn into our suffering. You remember this, it's very, very good, because you'll never blame another person for your suffering, right? It doesn't make sense. Can't be. But they're an object that could help produce it, but they're not the main cause, they're not the substantial cause. They're an object, but like I say, the object itself doesn't do it. It's the relationship of your mind to that object. This is where the inappropriate attention comes in. What attention? What type of attention that you placed upon the object? So they will be finding their ways of doing that. Everybody tries to deal with suffering the best way they can. So one of the things. So there's a. I'm probably sure that they don't know this technique, but it's a technique called thought transformation. They don't know it, you can't use it, but that's very useful. However, I read about some Buddhist monks who did years and years in Chinese jails with lots of torture. And so if you think about that, like, if you put yourself in a certain situation, right, you can't get away. They're going to come for you whenever they want to come for you, and they're going to hurt you. So that is the same situation. What are you going to do? How do you think about it? Well, these guys got released after 20-something years. They were not trained monks. But they came up with very little trauma. So the question is, the Western psychologist asked, why? How come? When any other group of people have been interviewed on the torture situations, like most people from South America, all the countries around the world where these horrible regimes come to power, they torture people, right? The people come out, they're messed up. Long, long time to recover. Not the Tibetans. Why? The answer is because of their understanding of what causes suffering. So their take on it was, I have to see, I have caused great suffering to others. The substantial cause of my suffering is of my own mental continuum. It's a detachment to some phenomena, but not to everything. It's just like saying to yourself, look, that guy is hurting me now. I hurt many other people like that myself in past lives. Now it comes around to me. It's fair. There's nothing unfair about this. There's nothing really wrong about this. And not only that, but they felt quite a lot of compassion for the person torturing them. Because they know what you're doing to me, that's what's going to happen to you. But I did it myself, and now it's coming right back around to me. And I accept it, but, which makes it, you know, a very better thing to do, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, so even then, so I was like, wow, okay, just the teachings on karma could have a massive effect on them. They didn't have the training about the higher monks and about thought transformation and so forth. But just this understanding that what are the actual causes of suffering? The substantial causes and contributory causes. The jailers and this whole system just contributed. And so if I can just bear this now, accept it now, and not have angry thoughts towards my captors, this is really good for me. And that's what they did. And when they were released from jail, they were pretty, I mean, of course that's very familiar to us, but the mental, what we call trauma, is nowhere near as much as great as it's been to other people who've been in prison or tortured. Yeah, so one of the things that, like I say, in Gaza, or any place where you find it that's really heavy like that, right? Like you might be being hurt people, chasing the killer. But if you understand karma, your thing will not, you cannot think like, I need to kill you to get away or stuff like this, right? You do not want to be creating angry thoughts towards those people. Because it does nothing to them. Think about it. You can be sitting there thinking all these angry thoughts about me. I don't care. There's no effect on me. But I'm sure it'll have a great effect on you. Now, so once you understand that, like wishing to hurt, hurting, hurts oneself. And you decide, okay, if that's true, I'm not going to hurt. And if others understood what I knew, they wouldn't hurt either. But they don't. So, of course, they do. Now we have inappropriate attention. So I put this guy, I had a much better picture of that one when he used to go like this, he'd open up his hands, everything was big. Big deal. This guy's like, the fish has gone away, this was big. And that's what it is, right? The mental habit of exaggerating the qualities of objects. So this is, I'll tell you a little bit about this, right? So, this is my next one. This is, so inappropriate attention is a deluded mental factor that focuses on an object in a mistaken way. It's the mental habit of exaggerating an object's qualities. For example, when attachment arises, we focus only on the good parts, making an object seem more desirable than it is. So when we look, like I say, so the thing is, so if I look at Deb, right, or Deb's looking at me, as human beings, we have good qualities and bad qualities. If it's with attachment, the bad qualities don't appear, only the good. I see only the good in the object. Not only that, the good seems to be from the side of the object. The object is good. So you've got two ways of the attention being inappropriate here. One is shutting out anything negative about it, so only the good. And then the other is the good's coming from the object side. So there we have this ignorance and also the exaggeration of qualities. So it's not only good, it's all good. And like I said, it shuts out the negative. If it were anger, it's just the opposite thing. We just shut out the good qualities. Only the bad appear. It seems to be coming from the side of the object. And the object's like worse than what it actually is. But this is how this inappropriate attention works. Yeah, that's right. We're talking about the subjective side, not so much the object. It's why we are apprehending the object. Our attention is dealing with the object. I remember one time, there's this vase, you know, there's just gorgeous vase. And we're all looking there, admiring it, and somebody went up really close, had a good look, and there was a crack in it. And they pulled you out the crack, and then after that, nobody saw there was a great vase in there. That's how it works, just like that. No good. So, okay, let's go backwards. So, it's inappropriate attention, then there was the object. And before that, there was the seed. Excellent, good. That's what I like to hear. Okay, then we have familiarity. So again, habits. Yeah. So familiarity is this powerful, the habit, right? It shapes our emotional attitude. And familiarity is why our delusions feel so natural, because we are familiar with them. You know, people say, well, that's who I am. Well, others will say, that's how they are. And so again, this comes about through a deep acquaintance with these disturbing attitudes. We become familiar with them. And so it's very easy to generate them. Next one, being distracted. So distraction and influence. So the company and the advice we follow shape us. So there's a story of these two monks on their way to Lhasa to go to a college there. And one of them was a bit cranky, and the other was a real sort of missed out fellow. And they were walking along together. Very well, that's how they were. Then they met, and I said, yeah, like, okay, so one wanted to go and spend some time with his family, then he was going to continue up to Lhasa. The other one says, okay, we'll split up, we'll keep going. placid guy met another monk who was quite afflicted himself, but had a different way of doing it. The monk that had the afflictions met a really kind, placid monk. So when they both got to Lhasa, the original monk who was a bit cranky calmed down perfectly. The other guy who was really calm, he became agitated. And so her saying, yeah, it all depends upon who you keep company with. Because if you stay in company with, you know, people for some time, you sort of become a bit like them. And so this is, so you become distracted from your knowledge, basically, from the way you were, you could be. I think if you call this one a media, because, you know, the media shape us, don't they? It's big and shape our culture. Then lastly, we have bad habits. But of course, yeah, so we have this bad habit of becoming angry or following your desire for attachment, following your lust. Of course, you're going to get yourself into trouble, right? Now, bad habits are sort of repeated negative actions of body and speech that make the delusion stronger. Now, negative habits, basically reinforce our delusions. Now, so Australia is one of the major companies that produce poker machines. In fact, most of the poker machines in America are built by Australian companies. And there was a very good show on television about the creation of the machines and how they brought in the psychiatrists to really work out how your emotions work with the lights and the numbers and the winnings. And one of the things I heard them talk about was, yeah, so when you go country, slot machines and the things have all countrified themes, and the music is country. And if it's in the city and industrial, then the music's industrial, the lighting's set up differently. But that's they're very good at this. What they're doing is they already know how people become addicted to other things like smoking and drugs and so forth, alcohol. But that's, so they build this into the machine to create the same pathway. And it works. It works really well. Yeah, so of course, it's a great way of enhancing delusions, isn't it? And people suffer a great deal because of it. And often you find yourself I couldn't stop myself. And then you go, no, you could, that's right. You can't, the way that these things are set up, so that you can't stop yourself. So it's, for them, most of the times, isn't it? It's like they create some excitement. So this attachment. The really thing is to build the greed, the attachment, the feelings of excitement. Okay, let's do our first meditation. Yeah, of course, I need this to go. Gosh, I'm working through this. Okay, let's have a little short meditation on this. So if you get comfortable again in your seat, just have your shoulders. Relax your back straight. Allow your body to breathe itself. What we're going to try here is to understand the six causes of our delusion. Not with any sort of harsh judgment towards ourselves, but just be curious. So, if you can, try to bring to mind a recent moment of either frustration or craving. So looking more at the anger, resentment, frustration side, and then there's the attachment side. And don't get too lost in the story here. Just remember, this has happened recently. So when our afflictions arise, they don't arise randomly. They arise from six specific causes. These causes are like a recipe for something. Now, if we understand the causes through us understanding them, this will empower us to find freedom from their painful results. And just as a fire needs fuel or spark and wind to burn, our afflictions need these six causes to ignite and to grow within the mind. Try to work out your own mind from what to disturb and look at how these causes, is the seed, is the object, and is inappropriate attention. This familiarity, influence, and habit. These all interact. Try to work out your mind when you're sitting here breathing, trying to work out these causes, how they could create disturbing emotions within your mental continuum. So you're going to get some sort of chain reaction here. The past seed is going to be triggered by a present object. And then we have our habitual ways of thinking about it. So have you seen this pattern of causes leading to an unwanted emotion in your own life? Sometimes all it takes is a simple comment. That'll be the object, right? That activates the seed of insecurity. This has been fueled by the familiar habit of self-criticism. So knowing this framework, how might it change how you meet different challenges? Knowing the framework transforms blame into wisdom. It allows you to see the causes clearly. And seeing the causes clearly allows you to choose a more skillful and peaceful response. So perhaps this evening, after class finishes, or tomorrow morning, try to look out for just one of those causes. And when you spot it, just create a small space for your next new choice. And carry this awareness with you. All of you hold the keys to your own state of peace. Breathe in through your nostrils. And exhale. So now we're going to look at ignorance as our major delusion here. Like I said, next week we'll be anger and attachment. We'll run it through this. These causes. So the question is, what produces ignorance? We know there are these six causes. So the first cause is the seeds and the imprints. But so remember, the seeds here are the substantial causes that we have on our own mental continuums to produce suffering. Because here we're looking at a delusion. So the result will be suffering. We have that potential with us already in terms of ignorance. Now, ignorance is just this latent potential for the delusion to arise in our mind. It's the substantial cause and the main obstruction to liberation. So liberation means we become free from these disturbing emotions. It's liberation or nirvana. The disturbing emotions cannot arise. The seeds cannot be empowered by other afflictions. That's the seed, but what's the imprint? So because we've been engaging with all these objects with ignorance, right? Ourselves, we've engaged with ourselves wrongly, and we've engaged with all the phenomena of the world wrongly. We've done it a long time, right? So in other words, that's what we call the habit of doing it is created. So now the world actually looks to us as if it inherently existed. That's the imprint.
I see.
The seeing, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like us too. So we see the world as if it objectively existed. We've done this from childhood. But most of us, for one thing, we were sort of stretching out to try and touch this objective world, right? We're trying to touch as much as we can, lick as much as we can, like make sense of this whole thing, right? And then our parents and our teachers will give it names to these things. Now they're out there. And it always looks like they're out there. That's what's been produced by this imprint. The appearance of an inherently existent world. The seed is like the belief in it. So you get rid of the seeds, yet this little stage is just like that. The only difference is we won't believe it. It's like being a magician, knowing the trick that's deploying on everybody. But everybody sees the trick, it looks like real, even to the magician, but he knows it's a trick. And he doesn't buy into it. So it's the same here. It's like, okay, this appearance is meant to stay right up until Buddhahood. This appearance of inherent existence stops realization of the two truths being a single entity. It always looks like this and that, me and you. That's the imprint. If we believe it, now there's the seed. So seeds and imprints produces an effect called ignorance. What are the objects? Well, ourselves, because we can get really cranky at ourselves. We're ignorant about ourselves. And anything else could be the object too. Ourselves and all phenomena. Self and phenomena are the two objects of ignorance.
It's also an action. So like I'm thinking three spheres.
Yeah.
You know, it's action and also part of phenomena.
The object could be the action. Sure.
Yeah.
So what's happening here in terms of the inappropriate attention with ignorance? Right? Well, two things. Reification and then exaggeration. So does anybody know what reification means? What's it? Deifying. There's things like that.
Making it super special.
Yes. So reification actually, so it's a bit like not dependent on anything.
Substantial
existence. Yeah. It doesn't, it's sort of easily verified. It doesn't depend upon causes or anything. It has its own existence. So inappropriate attention, stratification, exaggeration. So we dwell on the contaminated object, because the object is coming to existence through karma and delusion. Then we exaggerate the apparent qualities. So whenever ordinary beings like us see an object, we naturally apprehend it as being inherently existent. That's the first thing to get to mind. And you just check it out and just go, well, does the world, everything out here appear to be like over there, not dependent on you? And I go, yeah, well, that's it. And you got it. The world is objectively existing, separate and not dependent upon you. It looks like that, and you go, well, yeah, of course it does. And you go, that's it. So this mind that grasps at that is itself an exaggeration and a subtle form of inappropriate attention. Yes, this is just, like I said, the subtle form is all we've really got to get up with the wisdom, realizing the emptiness of inherent existence. See, the gross form of this over exaggeration is overcome by applying mindfulness, alertness, and conscientiousness, the subtle only by direct realization of emptiness. Then, of course, ingrained familiarity. It's looked like this, you know, since we were babies. It's never really been, you know, we try to challenge it in these classes, isn't it? I could examine, ask questions like this to see if it does exist in this way. Then you'll see, well, it can't. It's an impossible way of existing. So the way to challenge this familiarity that we presently have, in 7.9 training, they said, look at the world as if it were a magician's illusion. Mm-hmm. Or look at the world as if it were a mirage. So the mirages exist, the magician's illusions exist, don't they? They just don't exist as they appear to us. So I was thinking about this the other day, that when you look at a mirage, you know, they're looking at this morning says, well, imagine one where you've got trees and water. So it does appear to you, doesn't it? You go, yeah. But the trees are empty of any wood, and the water has no water. So they're completely empty of those qualities. So here we have a world that's actually appearing and does exist, but it has no quality of the inherent existence that it seems to have. It has no quality of the objectiveness that it seems to have. Just like the trees in the mirage have no wood, and the water in the mirage has no liquid. It's something not there. It's like this, this is one side. You look here and this, well, yeah, it looks all as if it objectively existed, naturally existed, right out there. It's open my eyes, and there it is. It's always there. Yeah. That's what it looks like. So again, you're just, you know, apply these reasons and challenges. If it were, then this would follow like this. And then, of course, it can't. Yeah, we have to challenge our own familiarity with the falseness of inherent existence. So what really helps reduce karma, of course, is ignorance, is the influence of karma. And then, of course, there's always bad habits, isn't there? The habits that strengthen it. Yeah, so remember that story of the six blind men, and they put up against an elephant. Each one had a different part of the elephant. Each one described what they felt. And they weren't blind. They felt what they felt. But what they thought they felt, they made it up. You know, so it's like us. So we're in this world, we're all seeing it, going through it. But there's a part of it we've made up. That's just not there. So even though the guys could feel the elephant and talk all about it, describe it, what they were talking about wasn't actually there. And us in our world, objective inherent existence is not there. That's the quality the world is empty of. And if you know, if you don't believe it, put it there and see how anything would function. If anything were to exist objectively, my question always is, how would you know it? How could you know something that objectively existed?
It would never change.
Yeah, no, you know, but it doesn't depend upon you knowing it, either. I'm saying you couldn't really know it.
But even
if this knowing is dependent.
Sorry, even if you name it, it's dependent on the name then. And so that's would work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite strange, isn't it, how we come to adopt this whole idea of we know, I'm sure most of you are old enough to be at school, they all talk about things objectively existing, like they're real, right? Yeah, so Buddha actually asked us, let's have a look, how real? And the only reality is, they're real depending upon their names. They actually have a basis to be named, all these dependencies. So they're no objective. If it's dependent, it can't exist objective. Can't exist without the dependencies. So ignorance, of course, one is major, like all the illusions, the major function is just to create havoc for ourselves, to harm us. It's its function. So when I read that, that was a great thing to read. You know, I was like, yeah, right. And you? No, I don't think so. Yeah, okay, you want to hurt me? Let's go. So this is what it does, it just disrupts happiness. Disrupts our lives, this makes it hard, really hard. Again, what's so interesting about making it really hard is nothing else but our own mind doing it. But it's not difficult from the side of the object. We play a part in this. And the part we play is misunderstanding the reality. That's the biggest part of all. Now, in defense of what I'm misunderstanding, all this other stuff arises. You see, in the texts again and again, they advise us to, and you know, the teachers, the guests, as I always try to advise us, please, you know, try to get a handle on understanding emptiness and then meditate on it, try to discover it. like for real. So remember here, when we all we're discovering is with these mentors is what's not there. That's all. That's all we're going to do. We're going to discover what's there. And it was never there. It wasn't ever there in the first place. It's not going to take something away. No, we're just going to see it wasn't there. Yeah, so because, like I said, the wisdom works against ignorance. So the wisdom of realizing interest doesn't negate us. We're not ever going to end up saying, well, I don't exist. If you thought that, you're just as crazy as, you're more crazy probably. Of course we exist, you're talking to me, right? This wisdom can't just like destroy us, right? Can't, we're here. It doesn't do that. It doesn't destroy the existent. If it exists, emptiness doesn't destroy it. All the wisdom of emptiness does is destroy a false conception, the wrong idea. That's all it does. As well as everything that follows along from that wrong idea, of course. You know? I'm sure most of us must have seen stuff or happened to yourself where an idea has been thought. It's not a good one, but a whole lot of people go along with it. And then it's calamity time, isn't it? There's a whole lot of other people come along and go, I don't disagree with you. And so, departure time. So with this, I've been using the AI to create some of these classes. And what I've put at the end of each question is, what's the practical use of this? So in the case of this one here, it says, when you feel upset, gently ask yourself, what idea of me or mine is being threatened here? Of course, this requires us to have enough patience to like take a couple of breaths and slow right down and then remember, well, what do I need to do? And ask ourselves the question, anybody familiar with Byron Katie's work at all?
Yeah.
What's the question? What's that first question she asks?
Is it true?
Is it true? That's right. And this is very similar type thing. Yes, is it true? And if you quickly say yes, she goes, are you sure? Is it really true? So she asks me another chance to go, and maybe not. It gives you a real chance to really slow down and sort of look at your own side of it. You're not really looking at, you're asking yourself, is what I'm saying or thinking true? And so there's a big pause to actually look at that and ask that question. So I think it's a very skillful method. Now, of course, so this ignorance, this is like the root cause, the number one affliction of all. You get rid of this one, all the others will stop all over because they're all founded on it. But again, just saying that doesn't mean to say once you discover it, like all your delusions just fall over and you're cool. It's not like that. The real gross ones are, yeah, they fall over. The innate ones, the ones that are just sitting in there waiting for the conditions, we've got to get at them. That takes a long, just become more and more familiar with what you've understood. And you go, all this wrong ideas getting whittled away. I'm clearly seeing that. But I think it's, when I think of it, it's like thinking, so when I was a kid growing up, at the end of the bed was a wardrobe. And we always used to scare ourselves by thinking there was someone in the wardrobe. Right? kids, huh? Right? Yeah, it's right, under the bed or in the wardrobe, right? Pretty scary thing, right? And, you know, you'd get scared.
Yeah. But I found out there was something there.
Well, we never thought of mice. I was thinking something much worse than mice. And that's what we often do. So we're just mice. Yeah, okay. Well, maybe we don't like them, but mice is okay. I know they're mice. But yeah, that's right. You don't want to find them to imagine in the wardrobe. But what do you do? Yeah, we've got to do something, aren't we?
Yeah.
Whatever the thing is that you fear is in the wardrobe, in the end, either your parents or it's you or something happens where you actually realize They're not in there. In fact, they've never been in there. It's just my imagination. However, you know, like the effects of fear still follow that on your imagination. Even though there's no boogeyman in there, right? It's the same with this. There's no inherent existence in anything. Yet our fears still arise. Our desires still arise towards all those objects, even though those objects don't have the things we think they have. Just do that again. You just sort of keep doing it, imagining things, and then think that what we've imagined is true. And the wisdom realizing the images is like going to the closet door and having a look. So there are people who are quite afraid of doing this meditation. So I remember once the lover's over saying, you might have heard of this bit. Well, he said, yeah, like the first time you do it, you can get really scared and go, or overjoyed. It's the two things. So one of the things is that, like, if you're really scared, you haven't got it quite right here. You're thinking that the thing that's not there was actually there, but it never was. But you're not negating something that did exist. The boogeyman was not in the wardrobe, was it? It wasn't that we opened the door and he vanished then. He wasn't in there at all.
It's scary. No wonder it's scary, right?
That's why he was born open after. Very short. Yeah, so inherent existence and wisdom is a bit like that. You know, I mean, we created our fears as kids. Some of them went away and some sort of stayed. But inherent existence is like that. We've imagined something. We've thought it was true. We've acted as if it were true. And now with these exercises, you've got to have a look. Yeah. In fact, in Chandrakirti's text, he says, not seeing is perfect seeing. And you go, that's right. That's exactly right. Not seeing the boogeyman in the water, correct seeing. That's right. You do not see the boogeyman. That's correct. When you do these exercises, you do not see an inherently existent object. You do not see that. In fact, you don't see any objects. But that doesn't mean to say they don't exist. You don't see inherently existent objects. You come out, here is everything. Then you realize, my gosh, the boogeyman's not there. Inherent existence is not there. But all these phenomena are existing dependently, not independent like I thought. But again, if you think of the boogeyman idea, like that boogeyman, you don't think that I've invented him. Isn't there on his own accord, is he? Independent of us. Not dependent on me at all in my bed, shaking in my boots, right? He's out there on his own side. He wasn't, huh? The idea that he was in the wardrobe was dependent upon you thinking he was in there. But he was never there. And it's the same with inherent existence. It's dependent upon us thinking it's there, having it appear to us and believing it's there. Wisdom realizing it shows you to yourself it's not there. It's not there. If it existed, it should be there. So this leads us to stopping ignorance, right? So we weaken it with the study of dependence or dependent arising. So this is Lama Sarpapa's great advice to us. Don't come at the ultimate truth through wisdom, come at it through emptiness, come at it through dependent arising. If you can see anything, if the object is this dependently, they lack an independent existence. They cannot and do not exist independent, without any dependence whatsoever. If it's dependent, it's not its opposite. It's that straightforward. But if it is dependent, it is empty. It does not have an independent existence. There's only two options, dependent, independent. If it's one, it cannot be the other. Independence is another way of saying reified existence, inherent existence. Natural existence from its own side, all those different terms. This against all that. There's only one or the other. can't be both. So we do this, you know, like I said, I began talking to you about disturbed emotions, saying they're products. Therefore, they depend upon causes and conditions. The cause is the seed, substantial cause. It requires different conditions. One of them, you need an object. You have to attend to the object inappropriately. You just a few times now you haven't been becoming familiar with doing this. There's lots of things that will help you do this, wanting you to look at it like this. In fact, everybody we know probably will see it like that later. So there you have all this dependency right there, this whole set of dependency. Okay, obviously delusions are empty of any intrinsic nature. Therefore, I can get rid of them. You know, and then we go, okay, so what's the main cause? The substantial cause of war, you know, this way of ratifying everything. This way of having inherent existence appear to us and believe it were true. That's the root problem. So we can do the study of dependence and then try to have a direct insight into it. And like I said, conceptual insight into this is very, very useful. It just doesn't have as great strength as a direct insight. But at least you'll have conviction in it. You'll know things exist dependently. And if they exist dependently, what's the best response I can have to that knowledge now? And so I guess the application for this was, whenever you feel a strong feeling of wanting something, ask, who is this I that wants? Then notice how the feeling shifts just with the inquiry. Now, I really like this quote of Lama Shaw Kappa's from Three Principal Aspects of the Path. He says that, so furthermore, appearances refute the extreme of rarefied existence. Emptiness refutes the extreme of non-existence. When you understand that emptiness arises in the form of cause and effect, you are not captivated by the view of extremes. This verse is explained the middle way. It's very, very similar to the Heart Sutra, this little section here. For this first line, appearances refute the extreme of rarefied existence, meaning that the very fact that things appear, function, and change prove that they cannot have a rarefied existence. A truly rarefied or inherently existing thing would be static and unchanging if such a thing were to exist. So because flowers grow from seeds, all sorts of things arise and perish, right? Then you know, okay, they don't have a rarefied existence. Then emptiness refutes the extreme of non-existence. This is a really crucial point here. So understanding that things are empty does not mean that they are nothing at all. That's a major thing to take away with realizing emptiness. If you speak to people who don't have much understanding of Buddhist philosophy, the first thing they think of empty is nothing. If it's empty, there's nothing there. This is a big mistake. So emptiness is the lack of inherent existence or independent existence. It's not the lack or absence of conventional existence. Now, this is sort of the middle way when you understand emptiness arises in cause and effect. Right? This is the middle. So I was talking to somebody the other day, and they're talking about like this and that. You know, so is this that? Is that this? And just grab two things and go, like, no. And are they the same? You have to go, like, no. Anyway, through this, this is to do with philosophy, I think. And somehow I went, oh my God, these guys don't have a middle way.
These guys don't have.
Yeah, so I think that's this or that, isn't it? This is this or that. They only have the two. Yeah, so it's like incomplete to the my way of thinking. Anything interesting you'd like to say about this? Yes.
Could you explain the third I've been thinking about this, about how emptiness arises from cause and effect. I understand the long way of going about it, but I'm wondering if you could explain a shorter way of emptiness arising in the form of cause and effect.
Well, okay, so the simplest way is that you see emptiness as dependent arising.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see, when you understand that dependent arising, dependencies arise in the form of cause and effect. So the dependencies here, oh, we're talking about all products.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that is quicker. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so what's really remarkable about this verse is that, this previous verse, it's the opposite way that nearly every other school understands emptiness. You can reverse this and make it really simple to understand. It's uncovered of this other interesting thing about it. So if you go like this, furthermore, appearances refute the extreme of non-existence. You go, yeah, of course, you're right there.
Yeah.
So appearance refutes the idea that you don't exist at all.
Yeah.
And that's how it usually is put. But then it goes, and emptiness refutes the extreme of rarefied existence.
That's the simple one.
So
interesting. It is, right? It's just, and that makes even more profound kind of sense, like this way.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So I remember one time getting off the bus over there, you know, and it was just amazing. You look up and go, there's all the appearance right there in front of me. And what does this appearance do? It refutes the extreme of rarefied existence. You go, yeah, of course, because what I'm looking at depends on me. It can't be just out there on its own, can it? Now, every sunset, all these things that are taking place are dependent upon something else. So, of course, they're not rarefied. They're dependent arisings. Everything's dependent. You look and you go, yeah, that's right. Yeah, so either way, it's quite interesting. In fact, doing it both ways is good to you to try and go, I get it one way, and you're right, it's not wrong, it's correct. But then you try and do it this other way, I think it's sort of interesting.
Sure.
I think so, Ben. This is what I thought this is. The remarkable thing about Lama Tsongkhapa, of course, was his understanding or his view that the two truths, each truth wasn't as important as the other. Many of the other traditions, the biggest thing is emptiness, ultimate truth. That's the big deal. But Lama Tsongkhapa saying, if you want to get the ultimate truth of anything, you come at it through its conventional existence. So they're informed as one another. You can't have an ultimate truth without a conventional truth, and all conventional truths are ultimately empty. So this is our last meditation. Again, just get comfortable in your seat. So we want to understand the root or the deepest cause of our suffering. Not to find permanent faults, but to realize that it's just a mistake that we can correct. And if we correct our mistake, we can be a benefit to ourselves and others. So we begin by accessing the subtle feeling of a solid, separate me. So I ask you, who's sitting on your chair? You'll say, I am. With the I is sitting on the chair. Is the I, the body's also on the chair? Is the I the body? Is the I something separate from the body? Either way, if you take either choice, you'd be wrong. So taking another choice, this is the fundamental ignorance, and this is the main point. This is the root delusion that disrupts our peace and creates all the problems. And its consequence for us is a life of grasping and aversion, a constant cycle of dissatisfaction. So ignorance is like darkness in a room. You cannot shovel it out. You have to just turn on the light. But you have to look and see. So how does this root delusion of ignorance function? Well, it functions by making us grasp at a false sense of self, which then becomes the center of our world and creates a painful split between self and other. So then if you felt the solid sense of me or self being threatened or praised, if you can, recall a moment of blame or praise, and then notice how that seemingly solid I felt so real and so vulnerable and so important. The appearance of this I being so real, that's the illusion. Do you think you could change your response to that appearance? If our sense of self or I is a target of harm, is not as solid as it appears, then our reaction need not be so solid either. And during the rest of the evening or tomorrow or the next day, whenever you have these strong feelings about yourself, your I, just pause and just notice how the I seems to appear to you at that time. Does it appear something separate from the body and mind at that time? And so in that meditation, you will know that it's impossible for the I or self be separate and independent from your body and mind. Even though it appears that way for sure, the appearance is there, but its existence is not. And it's like the mirage. The mirage appears to be water and trees over there. You go over there, and there's no water and trees. And here, our sense of I appears strong and independent of body and mind. You go there, there's no idea. All we know is that I is not there. It doesn't mean I don't exist. It just means that I is not there. It's not there. Yeah, it'll be shocking. The six causes produce the afflictions. And although ignorance is the major cause, it can be abandoned. It can be seen through. So there's nothing up there about these six causes up in the material. So I just thought I'd review your notes. Next week we'll do this again, except this time with anger and attachment. We'll look at each of those and I'll throw up some antidotes as well. So let's spend time thinking about this. It's late, but you've created merit. So we've got to take this wish of ours to become fully awakened for the benefit of all beings, and the study of the mind that we've engaged in, and may go towards that in that direction, and then we accomplish what we think. So due to the merits of these virtuous actions, we are quickly attain the state of everybody and lead all of them beings without exception into that righteous state. May the supreme jewel, body teacher, not take all the righteousness. May that Lord have no decline or increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as thinking beings remain, may I too remain to discover the signs of the Lord. As holiness, Dalai, the wish granted, the wish fulfilling joy, source of every single benefit and happiness of this world, to the incomparable kind of pleasing God's I receive, may all your holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. If only for a Rinpoche's swift recognition and return. In Holland, as for any of the new precious and complete teachings, the explanation and practice, you all the armor of patience that you never expect. Incomparable, they will be to you and make it success.